You're listening to the Sermon Coach podcast from sermoncoach.com. I'm your host, Dean Wilson. I'm here with Dr. David Maines, the director of sermoncoach.com. We're talking about helping pastors preach and prepare to preach more effective, life-transforming sermons. Well, David, we've talked often enough about the sermon-sucking black hole. I think we can assume our listeners know what it is. I'm wondering if the people who heard Jesus preach ever left totally forgetting what he said.
I don't think they forgot. I think it impacted them greatly. There is an interesting response in Matthew chapter 7, the final two verses after the Sermon on the Mount. It says, when Jesus had finished saying these things, the crowds were amazed at his teaching because he taught as one who had authority and not as their teachers of the law. That comes out in several of the other Gospels as well. But they were just kind of dumbstruck. This was amazing. It was different than what they were used to hearing. So my guess is that they remembered very well. He also told a lot of stories, and I think those stories stick in people's craws. So I think that they pretty much could have said, this is what he talked about. This is what I heard him say, and it profoundly affected me.
Do you think Jesus consciously or subconsciously answered early on the questions we ask about subject, response, how to, and how long?
Wouldn't that be the height of presumption on my part to say one of my prized pupils is Jesus? I'm overwhelmed by your question. I don't have any way to know how to respond to that. I do know that it's very clear what his subject is. You know, if you ask the question, what was the subject of Jesus' famous Sermon on the Mount? He was talking about inviting people to participate in a new kingdom. And he was telling them what the kingdom lifestyle was. If you are a part of my kingdom, this is the way you're going to think. So the kingdom lifestyle that he was advocating was his subject, and that was very clear in my mind. There's no question if Bible scholars would agree that the subject Jesus preached about more than any other subject was the kingdom of God. So he's talking about his kingdom and what it's like if you're a part of it. And if you don't like what I'm saying, you probably don't want to be a part of my kingdom. Now, it's going to be your disadvantage not to be a part, but at least understand that you're not getting snookered into something. I'm pretty much upfront as to what it's all about.
So we know what the subject of the Sermon on the Mount was. How about the response? What does Jesus call us listeners to do?
Well, that's very obvious as well, because he comes to the end and he says, you heard what I said, and if you obey my words, you will be stable in life. When the storms of life come, it'll be like you built your house on a rock and it doesn't wash out no matter what the storms are. Everybody's going to get storms. But if you don't obey what I'm telling you, you're like building your house on sand, and when those storms hit that are inevitable, your whole life is going to wash out. So that's basically what his response is. You listen to me, but listening isn't the end of the deal. Listening has to lead to obedience. If you don't obey, trouble. If you do obey, stability.
How about the how-to? Did Jesus get into the how-tos at all?
He's quite unusual in that regard, and I'm going to give you some examples. I'll actually read those verses to you. The answer to it is no and yes. He hints at how to. And we have to, again, come to the realization that his world was very different than our world. So he's not living in Erie, Pennsylvania, or Chicago, where I live, or Erie's where you are, in a modern setting. He's living in that setting. But even then, he does have specific how-tos. In chapter 5, verses 21 through 24, I'll read it to you and see if this sounds like a how-to you. You have heard that it was said to the people long ago, do not murder, and anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. But I tell you that anyone who is angry with his brother will be subject to the judgment, and so on. Anyone who says you fool will be in danger of the fire of hell. Therefore, if you are offering a gift at the altar and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to your brother, then come and offer your gift. Now, that sounds like a how-to in my mind. That's pretty clear, isn't it? So if they say, well, I don't know what you want me to do, okay, I'm telling you what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, it's almost frighteningly clear, because that kind of reconciliation is a scary thing for most of us.
Oh, yeah, very much so. I'll give you another how-to. This is from chapter 6, verse 16. When you fast, and people don't fast that much now. They did fast quite a bit back then. When you fast, do not look somber as the hypocrites do, for they disfigure their faces to show men that they are fasting. Look at how miserable I look and so on. I tell you the truth, they have received their reward in full. People are going to say, look at the man's fasting. Okay, that's your reward. But when you fast, put oil on your head and wash your face, so that it will not be obvious to men that you are fasting, but only to your Father who is unseen. And your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. So that's in terms of fasting in your life. That's pretty specific in terms of a how-to in my mind. They're not all specific, but here's another one. This is chapter 7, verses 1 through 5. Do not judge, or you too will be judged. For in the same way you judge others, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Okay, that's a basic principle. You're not to judge. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? It's just a funny picture. Jesus has a lot of things when you read them, they just strike me as being funny. You know, you strain at a gnat and you swallow a camel. You kind of see the humps go down. So there's a certain humor in it, but he's being specific. How can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, when all the time there is a plank in your own eye? If you actually visualize that, a guy with a big plank sticking, trying to find the little speck. You hypocrite, first take the plank out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly enough to remove the speck from your brother's eye. Well, again, Those are pretty specific in terms of how to, I would say. And that's unusual because it's hard when you begin to cross many generations and totally different lifestyle from New Testament times to present 21st century. They're still pretty specific that he's talking about in terms of how to's.
It's obvious that in formulating what he had to say, Jesus had the supernatural ability to have enduring relevance. The way that he framed things, as you just pointed out, they remain relevant down through the ages. How about the how longs? Is Jesus deal at all with them?
I wish you hadn't asked that.
Oh, okay. Let's move on then.
I'll give you one. The question is, you know, you're talking about time frame. You want people to say, do I need to move on this expeditiously so that over a period of time this thing is resolved in my life? This is as close as I can come out of the Sermon on the Mount, but he says, if you have an offering and you give the gift, first go reconcile with your brother. These words are a time factor anyway. Settle matters quickly with your adversary who's taking you to court. Do it while you're still with him on the way, or he may hand you over to the judge, and the judge may hand you over to the officer, and you may be thrown into prison. I tell you the truth, you will not get out until you've paid the last penny. So when do you do this? You do it right now, expeditiously. Settle it now. So there's a sense in which there's that time frame there that he's giving. But I would say I'm pushing the point a little bit to say that.
So we're going to conclude that Jesus didn't necessarily deal with the how longs, but after all, he wanted to leave something for us to do, right? We have to enflesh what it means to be a disciple. And in fairness, we also have quite a bit of instruction from Paul and the other epistle writers to support what Jesus laid down as a foundation.
You saved me. Thank you.
So overall, how would you define Jesus' preaching?
Well, it was different than the Pharisees. That's very clear from the text. He was not like what people were accustomed to hearing. And I would say in a similar way today, people are accustomed to hearing instructional things. Informational is maybe even a more accurate word. They're accustomed to a lot of information. But what Jesus was talking about was transformational. He was saying there's a whole change in the way you live, and it's going to be hard, but you're wise to do it to be a part of my kingdom lifestyle. And if you aren't, you know, that's your option. You can do whatever you want, but you're going to wash out, because this is the only way you're going to find stability in life. So it's the difference between, in my mind, informational and transformational preaching. And he was obviously transformational. Doesn't mean people were all transformed, but those who obeyed what he said were transformed. I mean, you look at the disciples when they first came as fishermen and then who they eventually became. There is incredible transformation taking place. And you look at the Pharisees, and basically there was a lot of information. And there were some people who responded, but it wasn't this transforming thing that took place.
Okay. Anything more to add on the topic of the preaching of Jesus?
Well, you added something that just as I think about it, you say, you know, you got Paul and all the rest of the guys to begin to add onto that. But Jesus preaches other places than just in the Gospels. Jesus has sermonettes, I would say, in the book of Revelation. The book of Revelation is the message of Jesus, God to Jesus, to the angel, to John. And he's saying this is what it's going to be like. But he has specific messages for each of those churches of Revelation. Mm-hmm. And there's seven churches, which is kind of the pattern of sevens all the way through that book. But he says to them, the church at Ephesus, return to your first love. You've lost your first love. So he, again, is following the very same pattern. Talks about what's good, what's not good. This is the response I'm calling for. And that's, I mean, in Laodicea, you know very clearly that those are a backslidden people. And he says, you know, I'm standing at the door and I'm knocking. It's not on the heart, your heart's door. It's the door of the church. It's kind of this funny picture. You know, somebody's knocking at the door of the church. Oh, it's Jesus. He's out there. You know, let me come in and we will enjoy fellowship together once again, but not the way it's been going. But he's very direct in terms of each of those churches. He has a very specific message to them, a response to them. Sometimes it's an encouraging response. Don't be afraid of suffering for my sake, you know, but again, all the way through the preaching of Jesus. In my mind, it's very clear, and there is a response that is quite clear. Not always how to, I've already covered that. How long, you know, we tossed that one up for a while, but it's there, yeah. It's transformational again.
And the key word is transformational. That fits in very well because what we're trying to do is help pastors preach effective, life-transforming sermons. A great enlightening session, David. What are we going to do next? Where are we headed?
Well, I'd like to go back to putting that sermon together, and I'd like to talk about introductions, because if you got a bad introduction, you got to work like the dickens to make up for that. So how do you get people interested in what you're talking about? So we'll just keep it right on introductions, okay?
Very good. And we invite you to join us next time. This is the SermonCoach.com podcast. sermon-coach.com. We've got lots of resources for you there, and we invite you to join us, and we invite you to come back and be with us on our next podcast.